Welcome back to the Dynamic Duo, where you can catch Kevin Barrett, Boy Wonder, on Mondays and Fridays, and Jim Fetzer during the middle 3 days of the week. My name is Morgan Reynolds, your guest host this fine Tuesday. And I am extra excited and pleased and honored to have our today's guest on the line from Madrid, Spain, and that is Professor Jesus Huerta de Soto, for a marvelous interview that we're going to have. And Professor de Soto, welcome to the Dynamic Duo.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, Professor de Soto is the leading Austrian school economist, certainly in Spain, if not the world. And I was explaining to our listeners earlier, Professor de Soto, that I live in Arkansas, and the main street here is De Soto, because Hernando de Soto explored here, and Albacete is quite close by, and Alta Way. So this interesting connection here to Spain,
yes, and
so much of America.
Okay, I should tell you that this Hernando de Soto, the discoverer, is one of my ancestors.
No kidding! Wow!
Yes.
That is great. So that goes back five centuries to Hernando de Soto.
That's right. He was born in Sherry, which is in the southern part of Spain, what we call in Spanish Jerez de la Frontera, Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother is also from Sherry. So he's one of my ancestors 500 years ago.
Well, do you think he was a good discoverer or just a very bad man? Which one?
Well, he discovered mainly Florida and all that part of the southern east part of the states.
Hmm? Yes, and he was governor of Cuba. Yes. Okay, Professor de Soto, that's fascinating. I'm glad I mentioned that. And you wanted to talk about our recent history of tremendous credit expansion and the trouble that it has caused us.
Yeah. Everybody should take into account that the monetary supply has been increasing worldwide around between 10 and 12% per year in the last 10 years. This means that roughly the amount of money has been doubled every 6 or 7 years. Hmm? And around 90% of that increase in money was injected in the market as credit expansions. So,
yes.
Like new credits given by banks to entrepreneurs.
And everybody but us, it seemed, was so happy to have all of this while the boom was underway.
Oh, well, this is, of course, this is a good thing in the short term, but very bad thing in the long term. It's like when you drink a lot of alcohol, you feel very excited at the beginning, but eventually you will not be able to avoid the hangover.
Yes. And now the governments, of course, are doing all the wrong things to try and keep the old ways going, aren't they?
You know, what happens is that the new credits are given at very low interest rates, and entrepreneurs receive the signal that they should go to invest in more future-oriented investments, in investments that will mature in a longer future, for instance,
yes.
Like real estate investments and so on.
How about mining? Mining, I was giving an example of, even though they're precious metals, mining shares have done poorly lately, and there's nothing more expensive than with a longer time horizon than opening a new mine.
Yeah, mining, of course, but also all raw materials and oil. So the first effect of this credit expansion was to increase prices in capital goods industries and in raw materials. And this is what we experienced, for instance, with oil and the other copper,
mm-hmm.
By and large, real estate. Hmm?
Yes.
This credit,
it was worldwide, certainly in all the high-income countries, including Spain and the United States.
Yeah, not only in America. The same was created in Europe. The European Central Bank was also increasing the monetary supply between 12 and 13% per year, so that a huge amount of new credits without the backing of true real savings was created out of nothing, out of thin air, not only in America, but also in Europe and in the rest of the world.
Now, I infer that you believe that the financial crisis and the downturn, the recession or depression, is going to be pretty serious because it's correlated with the credit excess, which was huge, the expansion. So are we going to have, you predict, a long and deep recession?
Yes, well, what happens is the following. What I explain in my book is the bridge, the connection between the financial world, the new money created, and the real economy world, the real investments that were wrongly initiated by entrepreneurs. So now the market, the free market, now is discovering the malinvestment, the errors that, by and large, entrepreneurs committed with this artificial financing coming from the credit expansion. So there is the market is now beginning to discover these errors and is trying to discover which are the true prices of the capital goods wrongly produced. And this is going to take time, and a lot of people is going to suffer. So the recession is unavoidable because the errors were already committed.
Yes, you use the term general impoverishment, which is consequent to squandering so much in the way of savings into bad investments.
Yes, because the real savings of the people were badly invested. Now we discover that some of those investments could be saved after a readjustment of them. Some of them couldn't be used, will not be able to find any use. The final result is that we are now poorer than we thought we were, because we spoiled our savings in bad investments. For instance, in Spain, we built 1 million homes, and now we are realizing that nobody wants to buy them. So these homes are idled, and a lot of concrete and a lot of effort and capital goods were invested in these 1 million homes, and now the homes have no value whatsoever.
Really? You think they will be simply abandoned and never occupied, even at much lower prices?
Well, according to our calculations, we could, absorb around between 100,000 and 200,000 homes per year. So it will take between 5 and 10 years just to digest this malinvestment.
Yeah, tremendous overbuilding. This is the Dynamic Duo, your guest host, Morgan Reynolds, that's me, and we are interviewing Professor Jesus Huerta de Soto from Madrid, Spain, about the financial crisis. Don't go away. Days of the week. My name is Morgan Reynolds, your guest host, this fine Tuesday, October 21. And I'm very pleased and honored to have as my guest today Professor Jesus Huerta de Soto. He has a marvelous book called Money, Bank Credit, and Economic Cycles, which is available from Mises.org. That's Mises.org. As well as he has an article from October 6 on Mises.org addressing our current financial crisis and recession. If you would like to call in, our number is 866-582-9933. That's 866-582-9933. And Professor DeSoto, I wanted you to address the stock market. And one of the interesting things you say about the securities exchange market is, and I quote, "Uninterrupted stock market growth never indicates favorable economic conditions," unquote. And that's very contrarian.
Yeah.
Explain.
When we see that the stock market index, like the Dow Jones and the other indexes in the world, goes up and up and up, we should always suspect that there is a monetary reason for that. In a pure free market economy with a gold standard, with a more or less stable amount of money, the stock market indexes wouldn't go up and up and up. Some companies would go up and other ones should go down, but no, we couldn't see those indexes increasing so much. Whenever they increase so much, year after year, we are sure that the whole thing is fed by artificial credit expansion, and that sooner or later a financial contraction will appear, as we are now witnessing in the markets.
Yes, and you say that this is the first sign that the expansion is artificial and has feet of clay, and the slightest thing can set off a stock market crash.
Yes, because sooner or later a contraction appears. When the economic agents, the market discovers that the true value of the capital goods, the homes, the investments, is much lower than was originally thought, the prices in the stock market go down, so that we are now in this situation. Apart from that, also the assets of banks have much less value than was originally thought.
Yes.
And the liabilities of banks give the same amount. So banks are in a situation of insolvency, and they react to this insolvency situation contracting the credit they provide, the loans they give. And this is also an additional cause for the crash in the stock market and the decrease in overall prices.
That's the problem with an elastic supply of money and credit is that it's two-way. It expands in the credit expansion, but then it contracts in the contraction or the financial crisis. So what you want is a more rigid money system.
Yeah, you are entirely right. You are entirely right. And as a matter of fact, I explain in my book in which way the money expands very easily, but also it contracts very easily. It's like a chewing gum. So this creates very harmful economic cycles in the economy, and the only way to avoid them is coming back to a pure private monetary system, rigid monetary system, like the pure gold standard, with a 100% reserve requirement for private banks.
And no central bank.
Of course, not at all. Central banks were created precisely as lenders of last resort for private bankers in the contraction stages of the economic cycle. As a matter of fact, the whole current financial system is the result of an historical accident, what is called the Peel's Bank Act, enacted in Great Britain in 1844. If you want, I can elaborate a little bit about that.
Oh, yes, right. Yeah, you make a very good point about how they got it wrong there by prohibiting the issue of banknotes, but they allowed demand deposits. Didn't block the banks in every way they should have.
Yeah, you are right. What this Peel's Bank Act, one in a way entirely correct, this law didn't prohibit the issue of private banknotes. What the law requested is that private banknotes should be always have 100% collateral in gold. So it was a good provision of this law. But the law forgot to require the same for deposits, because in those days the economists still had no clear idea that deposits were part of the monetary supply exactly the same as banknotes. So what happened is that from the Pillsbank Act till the present, the banking sector, the banking industry, kept doing artificial credit expansions not against private banknotes, but against deposits, creating out of thin air new deposits and, as a collateral of them, new credits.
Right, unbanked by voluntary savings. Now, Professor DeSoto, I'm reminded that back in 1971 or 1970, then President Nixon, Richard Nixon, said, "We're all Keynesians now," and you have a marvelous chapter where you criticize the monetarists. The best known monetarist would be Milton Friedman, and of course John Maynard Keynes, and you find them remarkably alike. And to me, it looks like Ben Bernanke, the head of the Federal Reserve here, he's not only in a blind alley, but he's intellectually unarmed. He doesn't understand, because he's basically a monetarist. He thinks he learned all the right lessons from the United States Great Depression, but he hasn't learned any of the right things.
Well, I agree with you. The problem is that most of my colleagues are following the prescriptions of Friedman's main book, The Monetary History of the United States.
My name is Morgan Reynolds, your guest host today, and I am very pleased and honored to have as my special guest Professor Jesus Huerta de Soto from Madrid, Spain. And Professor de Soto is an expert, I think that probably the world's leading authority on what really causes economic booms and financial crises. And if you want to call in, the number is 866-582-9933. That's 866-582-9933. And Professor de Soto, before the break, we were basically saying that economists are at fault here and bear a heavy burden here by not having a correct theory of the economic cycle.
Yeah, we were talking before about the bad influence of Milton Friedman, especially because he wrote a book in the 1960s entitled "The Monetary History of the United States," which the conclusion that central banks should avoid any recession injecting money. So the bad influence of this book is that all central bank governors, for instance, mainly Alan Greenspan, whenever they thought they saw the beginning of a financial crisis or an economic recession, reacting, injecting huge additional doses of new credit.
Yes, and then of course simultaneously cutting their target interest rate.
Yes, of course, both at the same time, both policies, new money, new credit, and decreasing interest rate till 1%. You had a 1% interest rate for many months in the States, and we here in Europe got a 2% also for more than a year. But not only reduced interest rate, but allowing to private bankers to increase the monetary supply at a 12% increase per year. And this is an indirect result of this book, because in this book, the main message of this book is that the Great Depression of 1929, according to Milton Friedman, was the result of not enough government intervention, not enough credit expansion, that the Federal Reserve didn't react on time, injecting enough money. So I think that this book is very harmful, And it is a pity because it was written by a man that in other areas defended the free market.
Yes. It's really disastrous when you think about how much impoverishment results from the squandering of savings into bad investments, and it disserves humanity. It's really sad. Well, I wonder why this is that it wasn't bad intentions by the or lack of intelligence. I mean, part of it is the corrupt nature of economics, where clever, original, mathematical articles are valued.
You are entirely right. I think that at the bottom of the current situation, we have two problems. First of all, a wrong theoretical apparatus to interpret what is going on. And this comes from the macroeconomic approach created both by Keynesians and the monetarists that are entirely wrong. They both are entirely wrong because they do not see in which way credit expansion affects in a microeconomic way real investments. Mm? They lack a true capital theory. Mm? And the second problem is that what I mentioned earlier, that the whole current financial system is inherited from this wrong Peel's Bank Act of 1844 in Great Britain,
mm-hmm.
that forgot to request also 100% collateral in gold for deposits.
And, you know, the one lesson, object lesson, would be the Japanese experience. So it's nearly two decades now. And I'm looking at an article in Barron's Weekly here, Barron's, which is a Dow Jones publication, and it says here, this article about Japan's banks, the Japanese banking system was devastated when Japan's investment bubble burst in 1989. And it says in another sentence or two, the crisis hit home in 1997 when two big institutions failed. The government then started injecting capital, quote, capital, into the banks and pressed hard for consolidation. It didn't work, and in 2003 came the failure of Behemoth Resona Bank and the start of another round of government recapitalization and so on. And it's never gotten Japan out of their sluggish, torpid economic performance. They've had all these interventions.
Yeah. Well, I would say that there are three possible scenarios when the government react to a financial crisis. The first possibility is the Japanese case that you just mentioned. The Japan government tried all possible, both Keynesian and monetarist intervention. And at the end, nothing happened. The only way to live from a recession is that the market discover what has been wrongly invested and is able to readjust those wrong investments. Mm. But if the government provides free money and capital to everybody, all the incentives to look after the errors and to try to rearrange them are entirely stopped. And a possible scenario is the Japanese one, that the whole economy is kept indefinitely into recession.
Yes.
But there are two other possible scenarios. If you want, I can explain.
What are the other two?
Well, the opposite scenario is that the government is so successful among quotations that the government is able to create a new bubble again.
Yes.
So this is what happened with the recession of 2001, the financial crisis of the technologicals. Hmm? You know, what happened is that Alan Greenspan reacted with a huge new additional dose of money for many reasons. Also, the attack to the World Trade Center also was considered, and so on. and all central bankers in the world follow the model of Alan Greenspan, so that the bubble was recreated at the cost of postponing the recession, at the cost of doing the recession much worse in the future. And precisely that future is our present now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the principal bubble was in real estate prices, but other assets as well, yes.
Yeah, you are okay, right.
Third possibility?
You are entirely right that the real estate took the leadership of the new bubble after the shares of the technological. Hmm? The third scenario is that I think is the one in which we are now, that more or less badly the government is able to keep the banking system alive.
On the other side of the break from Professor DeSoto. Don't go away. This is the Dynamic Duo. My name is Morgan Reynolds, your guest host today on Tuesday, October 21. And I'm very pleased and honored to have as my special guest today Professor Jesus Huerta DeSoto from Madrid, Spain. He's certainly a leading world authority on economic cycles, money, and bank credit. And we've only got this last segment of 10 minutes. And I wanted to have you do two things. One was explain this third outcome of all this government intervention, where today they're throwing trillions of dollars around and the banking crisis. Explain that a bit more. And then maybe you can address real reform with a few more minutes, how a 100% reserve would system would work, et cetera. So what's our crisis like today?
Well, the third scenario I was talking about is the one I think we are going now, in which the central bankers and governments are trying to keep the financial system alive. Probably they will be able to keep more or less badly the financial system standing as it is, but the market will begin a healthy recession. I mean that I trust that the market will be able to discover those wrong investments, and which more or less difficulties will begin to try to readjust them. Especially in the States, because you have in America a very flexible economy. The European economy is more similar to the Japanese one, more rigid.
In terms of labor regulations, for example, welfare state intrusions.
Yeah, you are entirely right. So it takes more years in Europe to readjust the economy than in the States. Although I would say that by and large, malinvestments in Europe are not so large as in the States, because the European Central Bank was crazy, but not so crazy as the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve was decreasing interest rates to 1%, the Europeans were decreasing to 2%.
Small difference is large in terms of the impact on capital values, right?
Yeah. I would say also that the amount of fiduciary media, I mean of credit expansion created, was huge in Europe, but not so large as in the States. Mm? So let us see if this scenario is the one what we are going to experience. So we'll have a 1 or 2 years of a deep recession. And eventually, we will come back with a more healthy economy. The problem is that very probably we will begin with a new credit expansion if we are not able to establish an overall reform of the financial system that should be based in three principles. First of all, to demand private bankers to keep 100% reserve ratio on demand deposits, only on demand deposits and equivalents to demand deposits.
Yes.
This is to guarantee that banks from the reform on can only provide loans against true savings. I mean that banks from acting with 100% reserve deposit can only give a loan if they have received a loan before, acting as pure intermediaries.
Yes, like in the States here, that would be a certificate of deposit where there's a fixed length of the term of the loan and a given interest rate, and it's understood that you're not going to have an early withdrawal. There will be a penalty.
That's right.
Different than a checkable demand deposit.
That's entirely different. So people will have two options, either to make a deposit, having the possibility of writing a check in any moment or retiring the money, but paying for the work of the bank of keeping the money, not the bank paying an interest to the depositor, but the depositor paying a small fee to the banker for this service of providing accounting services, payment services, and so on. And if the depositor wants to make an investment, he should or she should retire the money and make a loan to a third party, directly or indirectly, using a saving bank account or investment banking or a mutual fund.
Mm-hmm.
Hajek, the pupil of Mises, in one of his books, explains that in this system we are proposing, two different kind of banks would be allowed. A first group would be companies providing monetary services and deposit services, and extracting companies, you know, extracting gold from the mines. And entirely separate from this first group would be the mutual funds, investment banks, just receiving savings like loans and giving loans like in pure intermediaries. Mm-hmm. So if the regulation in the future of the government goes toward this, separating these two different functions, we are in a way approaching the reform, the pure reform I am defending. But two more principles should be included apart from this. If the second reform that is very important is to eliminate central banks, because central banks are nowadays through central planning agencies, like the old Ghost Plan in the Soviet Union, trying to establish the monetary supply, fixing the most important free market price that should be free, the interest rate.
Yes.
Now the interest rate is established by a decree of the central banks. And also, central banks act as lenders of last resort and are the main responsible organism for the credit expansion. So it is very important to eliminate this last remain of socialism that we still have in the Western world in the financial system. The third principle is to privatize money entirely. This means to exchange the pure paper money by gold.
Yes.
Because it is important that the amount of gold worldwide cannot be increased by the whim of the governments. It is increasing around 1 or 2% per year, which is the production of mines. And this is a true guarantee that from the reform on, it will not be possible that governments do manipulate the monetary supply anymore.
Yeah, rigid supply of money. That's marvelous. And because we suffered so much from the elastic supply of money and credit. Now, Professor DeSoto, in his book, Money, Bank, Credit, and Economic Cycles, has a very thorough chapter. The last chapter, 9, explains how this could come about, and it's almost a paradise to read about how a true gold system would work. You would have, for example, a gentle deflation in the level of prices throughout the economy, benefiting everyone.
Well, at the beginning, in the day of the reform, we very probably we will have a one-shot inflation, because when we exchange paper money against gold, the price of gold will go so high that
it'll be what, $3,000 or $4,000,
yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, a lot of gold will appear from under the stones, but this will be only one shot. Inflation.
Well, thank you, Professor Jesus de Soto. From Madrid, Spain, buy his book, Money, Bank Credit, and Economic Cycles, if you want to learn what's really going on in the economy. And I thank you for listening. This is the Dynamic Duo with your guest host, Morgan Reynolds. Please tune in and listen to Jim Fetzer on the Dynamic Duo tomorrow. Thank you for listening.